You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 23rd of November 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we've got some more news today concerning the rewriting of history and the portrayal of the British people as the bad guys. Once again, we have an incident where heroes of our past have been honoured by our people at the time that they did their heroic deeds, and now 150, 170 years later, we're being told that we know better than the people did back then, and somehow we can judge the people back then from 170 years ago, and we can find them wanting in some way. And as I pointed out last week, what we basically have here is primary source documents. The primary source is the people of the time that put the memorial up. And they put the memorial up because they saw the person they were memorializing as an absolute hero. We have no right today to claim that we know better than the people of that time. And what we actually have here, we have an incident where they're not saying they actually know better. They're just complaining because they happen to be descendants of the people who were on the other side. And this isn't to do with slavery. This one is to do with the British Empire. And I would encourage listeners to check out the last six episodes that we've done of Real Britannia, where we covered Chinese Gordon, a hero of the British Empire. And I believe his story tells gives a much more realistic impression of what the British people were like that were involved in the British Empire. And what we have today in this story here today, we have British heroes fighting against Indian savages. And we're now being told that the British heroes were the bad guys and the Indian savages were the good guys. Edinburgh Castle has revealed it will replace a sign calling British soldiers who fought in the Indian Mutiny heroes after a visitor blasted it for pandering to imperialism. And these heroes actually saved the lives of many women and children, and the Indian savages were murdering and raping the women and children. And why should we not celebrate the British Empire? It was our empire. We conquered the world. We brought civilization to what is now known as the Third World. We should be honouring it. We should be glorifying it. It shouldn't be seen as pandering to imperialism. The person making this complaint, Junior Dr. Vivek Majumdar, was infuriated when he saw a distasteful sign claiming Lucknow had been relieved following a siege in India in 1857. And this is quite a famous siege. We'll get into it later on in the podcast. But this junior doctor, this Vivek Majumdar, he would not even be in Britain. He would not even be a doctor. He would not even know how to read and write if it was not for the British Empire. And this is the gratitude that he has. He tries to change history. He tries to tear down what it is that we have built in this country and our memorials of our heroes. Bosses at the tourist attraction said an historian is currently working on replacing the sign with something more accurate and balanced. How can it be more accurate and balanced? This sign was put there many years ago. The people that fought in that Indian mutiny, they were seen as heroes, particularly some of the characters in it. One of them has even got an island named after him. The British people of the time saw these people as incredibly courageous, brave men, and they wanted to honour them. And just because this Vivek Majumdar, his ancestors, were part of the savages that were fighting against them, it infuriates him to see this. And yet, if it wasn't for them putting down that siege, India would be in the same state today that it was in 200 years ago. And all you have to do is look at what happened when the British left India. What happened when the British left India? There was massacres and massive amounts of rape. Millions of women were raped. I don't know the numbers of the people that were killed, but it's into the hundreds of thousands. It's probably into the millions. And this happened with the partition of India. India split into three different parts, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and India, because they couldn't get on with one another. The only thing that was stopping that from exploding during the time the British Empire was there was British rule. It was only the British people that managed to prevent that massacre. And as soon as the British had left, there was all-out war, basically, which we had been preventing. And we're not thanked for that, for preventing that. We're told that our people are not heroes. And we're blasted for pandering to imperialism, according to this doctor. The sign next to the India cross on the castle's esplanade was too celebratory of the British and dismissive of the Indian forces, according to Dr. Majumdar. The Indian forces were mutinying. The Indian forces had put the former barbaric leader as in charge. The British had annexed this part of the country and taken it from the Mughals, who were absolute barbarians, and the Indians had mutinied, and they had put this Mughal emperor guy back on the throne again. And they were massacring the British. So the British fought back, and we won. And apparently we shouldn't be celebrating that, and we shouldn't be dismissing the Indian forces, who were the enemy at the time. The British would have been quite within their rights to just genocide all those Indians, but they didn't. They were very magnanimous towards them. Dr. Majumdar from Marchmont in Edinburgh said, "The description of the battle wasn't inaccurate. It was more how the belligerents were presented that I took issue with. In my eyes, it was blatant pandering to imperialism." Well, they were the belligerents. They were the enemy. That's why they are portrayed in the light of being the enemy, because they were the enemy. And we are British, and it was British people that were fighting against them, so we glorify them. Majumdar says, "In my eyes, it was blatant pandering to imperialism. It was not the first time I had seen distasteful imperialistic things in Scottish public spaces, but this was the first that painted the British as heroes and that Lucknow was relieved." So he's shocked that in Great Britain he sees things that celebrate the British as being heroes. When he's in India, does he not see things that celebrate the Indians as being heroes? This is his point here. He sees the Indians that were mutinying, he sees them as heroes. And that's fine, that's his right. They're his ancestors. Of course he's going to see them as being the good guys. But he shouldn't expect to see them portrayed as good guys in Britain by the people that were fighting against him. You know, this is the sort of situation we get ourselves in with diversity when we tell people that are of Indian heritage that they're actually British. And then when we see 150 years ago, when the Indians did not have British citizenship, and we see that we're actually fighting against them in some instances, now that these Indians do have British citizenship, they think that all of this should be changed. This is directly down to this policy of taking the British ethnicity and handing it over to anybody that sets foot on our soil. The Siege of Lucknow followed a mutiny of most of the 100,000 soldiers in the British East India Company's Bengal Army stationed in North India in 1857. Now, if you have a mutiny on a ship, the sailors can all be executed for mutinying on a ship. So by rights, these 100,000 soldiers could have been executed. They mutinied against the British people, who were their benefactors. And as well as mutiny, I mean, it was treason. As I said, they put the Mughal guy back on the throne. I mean, they did the worst possible thing that they could do. And this Indian says that the people that fought back against them shouldn't be seen as heroes, and that Lucknow wasn't relieved. The events are often referred to as the Indian Mutiny or the Indian Rebellion. Sir Henry Lawrence, the East India Company's commissioner in Lucknow, ordered his garrison to retreat into the British residency in the city, and the soldiers survived for 6 months before they were finally reached by a force including the 93rd Highlanders under the command of Scottish General Sir Colin Campbell. So yes, it was a siege. They were under siege for 6 months with all these savages outside, and the 93rd Highlanders came in and rescued them, and of course they were heroes. They were rescuing women and children. After reading the sign, British Indian, there we go, see, he's got British citizenship. This is why he thinks he has a right to change our history, because we've told him that somehow he is both Indian and British. And of course, he is actually Indian. That's why he's complaining about this, because he is of Indian ancestry. But he's in Britain. And back then, 150 years ago, Indians didn't have British citizenship. And we were fighting against them. You can't rewrite history and change that and make them out to be the good guys now just because we have this policy of spitting in the face of reality and telling other races that they are actually British. After reading the sign, Dr. Majumdar said he was initially shocked and then infuriated. Just a week after, he emailed the Historic Environment Scotland, who are responsible for the sign. Officials accepted his criticism and promised to change it. What the hell are they doing accepting his criticism? They should be, they're supposed to be responsible for preserving the history of Scotland. And instead of preserving the history of Scotland and saying, well, this is accurate, they were heroes, we are British, we want to glorify our British past, particularly in heroic battles like this, instead of that, they've pandered to this Indian and said they're going to change it. Dr. Majumdar said, "I don't think Britain's past should be forgotten, nor its attitudes in the past. There is an 8-foot stone Celtic cross there that needs explaining." Imagine that. Why should one of our Celtic crosses need explaining? We've had Celtic crosses up for thousands of years. The Celtic cross goes back to before Christianity. We had the Celtic cross symbol. He will find Celtic crosses in India, in his own homeland. And this just shows you that he has just taken advantage of the way that things are at the moment with the British pandering to these people, because he knows full well that the Celtic cross exists in India, the same as he knows that the swastika exists in India. But he's trying to draw a link between an ancient Celtic cross that is in Scotland, and he's trying to draw a link with that with white nationalism or white supremacy, obviously, which he knows is false, because this is a historic Celtic cross that is out there that he's highlighting. What does he mean? It needs explaining. Does he think we should be smashing down all our Celtic crosses? I'm sure he would love to see that, the general iconoclasm that is going on in the Western world at the moment. Condescendingly, he says, "I think this is a step in the right direction in how we should explain the past and examine it from a neutral light." No, why should we be examining it from a neutral light? We should be examining it from the point of view of the British. I mean, this is the whole racist thing in a nutshell, isn't it? They want the white people to examine everything from a neutral light, while every other race examines it from the point of view of their people. Which is what this Majumdar here is doing. He claims to be a British Indian, but he's looking at this from an Indian point of view. He's not looking at this from a British point of view. Dr. Crispin Bates, Professor of South Asian History at the University of Edinburgh, said, "Although Britain saw the event as a great victory, Indians viewed it as the first national Indian war of independence." So the Indians have every right out in India. Now that they have independence, they have every right to honour this first Indian war and have memorials. And we have no right, as the British, to tell them to change their memorials. But in the same way, they should have no right to tell us to change our memorials. As it says here, we saw the event as a great victory and we memorialised it. And that memorial is a record of history. It's a record of how people saw things back then. To think that we can change it, it means that we're lying to ourselves about history. It means we are falsifying history. And you think, if this, how long has this been going on for? How long has this falsification of our history been going on for? I would say it's been going on for a long time. Most people are not even aware that these great civilizations of the past were white civilizations. All of that is being covered up. And the people that are doing the covering up are the people that we look to actually preserve history, like this Historic Environment Scotland. We look to them to preserve our history, and yet they are the first to jump forward and say that they will change it to appease foreigners. Dr. Bates added, "The crushing of the uprising was seen in Britain as a great victory of British civilization over violent and barbaric Asiatics." So that's the truth of it. These weren't civilized people. They were savages that we were fighting against. And we were very lucky to actually save the numbers of people that we did save. And it's a disgrace to change this now and spit on the memory of these brave British men that fought against these savages. I mean, even the politically correct Dr. Crispin Bates describes them as violent and barbaric Asiatics. He continues, "Unsurprisingly, Indians see these events very differently. In 1910, Indian nationalist V.D. Savarkar called it the first national Indian war of independence. Many continue to use this term, seeing in the events of 1857 as one occasion when people of all classes and faiths in North India came together to fight successfully for freedom." And what do you mean? And yeah, it was Hindus and Muslims fighting against the whites. And as soon as the whites had gone, the Hindus and the Muslims fought against one another, as I pointed out, that led to the partition of Pakistan. "The 150th anniversary of the uprising in 2007 was a major occasion for national commemoration." Great, wonderful. I'd love to see the Indians celebrating their national heritage, but they are clearly going to see their history from a different vantage point than we are going to see our history as British people. And if you then tell these Indians that they are somehow British, you're going to get this clash, aren't you? You're going to get this clash over history, and you're going to end up with a false version of history. A spokesman for HES said the sign would be updated to include a fuller context, including from the Indian perspective. And of course, including a fuller context, as well as being bad grammar, basically just means projecting today's sensibilities onto the past and accusing them of being racists. They added, "We agree the use of the contemporary British description of the regiment as the heroes of Lucknow lacked qualification in the context of the siege and the Indian Rebellion of 1857. That's what they've always been known as. They've always been known as the heroes of Lucknow. That's what they were called at the time. That's what they're still called now. Can't change that. What are they going to change it to? The enemies of Lucknow? The bastards of Lucknow? I'm sure the Indian would like to see that. The oppressors of Lucknow? I mean, wait till you hear the story of what actually went on there. "A fuller context of the siege, including from an Indian perspective, is critical for our visitors to better understand this event and why it led to the erection of the India Cross on the Esplanade at Edinburgh Castle." Why is it critical that we have an Indian perspective on this? We don't need an Indian perspective on a memorial that is honouring our heroes here. What we need is the way that it was seen at the time. We need to know how the people at the time saw this, not how the Indians see it today. "As such, one of our historians is currently undertaking research into the siege and the rebellion of 1857 to ensure the new content on an updated panel is accurate and balanced." And all just because one Indian guy complained about this. Well, let's have a look at what actually happened. And this isn't from a right-wing website. This is from the article itself that actually tells us what happened there. "The Siege of Lucknow began in May the 25th, 1857, when British employed Indian soldiers, known as sepoys, mutinied in the city of Lucknow in the north of India. The group of around 5,000 sepoys, which later grew to around 30,000, besieged the residency, the home of the British resident general in the area. At the time, the role was held by experienced administrator Brigadier General Sir Henry Montgomery Lawrence, who had only been appointed to the role 6 weeks earlier. he faced mounting discontent in the region, which had been annexed by the British East India Company a year earlier. At the time, sepoys who formed part of the company's vast private army were becoming increasingly concerned their own religious customs and traditions were being pushed aside for more Christian values and activities. The British had earlier replaced Indian aristocracy with British officials, while Christian missionaries were challenging the religious beliefs of the Hindus. And the actual detail of that is that what the British were doing, they were doing away with the Indian custom of immolating the wives that survived their husbands when their husbands died. The tradition was that these women would be thrown alive onto the funeral pyre after the husband, where they would then burn to death. And the belief was that they wouldn't actually feel any pain. And the British were trying to do away with this. Another custom the British were trying to do away with was human sacrifice. You may have seen Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom with the thuggy cult there. They actually existed. The thuggy cult existed. These assassins and human sacrifice people that would people that were travelling, they would kidnap them, torture them, murder them, drain their blood, do all these sick things. And that's where the word thug comes from. And the British were trying to do away with that. And it's portrayed here that the Indians were not happy about that. And it was the Christian missionaries challenging the religious beliefs. I mean, these beliefs were resulting in absolute savagery. I mean, some of it still goes on today in India. But if it wasn't for the British putting a stop to that, then India would not be the civilized place that it is today. Semi-civilized place, of course, because some of this still goes on. But the Indians have the British to thank for that. And again, the British were employing these sepoys. They were British employed Indian soldiers, and they mutinied. They were being paid by the British, and yet they mutinied and they started murdering their bosses. Basically, we'll hear why in a minute. And as it also says here, that the British were replacing the Indian aristocracy, that it says here, because they were corrupt and they were mistreating the Indians. That's why they were replacing the aristocracy. A year before the rebellion, in March 1857, a sepoy called Mangal Pandey attacked British officers at the military garrison in Barrackpore. He was arrested and then executed by the British in early April. But the flashpoint came over the introduction of the company's new Enfield rifle. To use the gun, soldiers had to bite off the end of a cartridge before loading a shot into the rifle. But the cartridge was rumoured to be lubricated with the fat of both cow, which was sacred to Hindus, and pork, which was forbidden to Muslims. As a result, neither group would put the fat of the animals into their mouths without going against their religions. Fair enough. That there is no evidence at all that the cartridges were actually lubricated with animal fat. So this was a lie. This was a falsehood. And yet the Indians believed this. Now, the falsehood was probably being put about by the Mughals who had been deposed, these indigenous barbaric rulers that the Indians had before the British annexed this part of the country. So it's probably them that were putting about this rumour. But the rumour was a false rumour. So the whole siege, the whole uprising, all of it was based on a lie. And the British were trying to tell these sepoys the truth that there wasn't any pork fat, there wasn't any beef fat that was on these cartridges. And of course, this is what united both the Hindus and the Muslims against the whites. 2 weeks before the siege of Lucknow began, a mutiny broke out in a city to the northwest called Meerut, and the soldiers marched on Delhi. There, the local sepoy garrison joined the Meerut men, and by nightfall, the Mughal emperor, Bahadur Shah II, had been nominally restored to power. So, worse than mutiny, worse than treason, they're actually putting the guy that had been taken down by the British, they've actually put him back in power. I mean, this is absolute treason that is going on here, and yet this Indian today thinks that we should be honouring these people that did this. The mutiny quickly spread to Agra and Kanpur, with mutineers commonly shooting their British officers before carrying out massacres in Delhi and Kanpur, murdering women and children. So These were savages. They had turned on their bosses. They had turned on their benefactors. They were murdering the women and children. No doubt they were raping them as well. And the brave British people that fought against this and the brave British officers that saved what women and children there were, they were absolute heroes. And this Indian doctor says, oh, we must change this. It must be round the other way. The Indians, the ones that were doing the murdering and the raping and the massacres, they're the actual heroes. The battle that broke out in the Bengal army was known as the Indian Mutiny to the British, but the first war of independence to Indians, and continued for 2 years until the fall of Gwalior on June the 2nd, 1858. And of course, at the time, it wasn't known as the first war of independence. That has only come about since they've actually had independence. Back in Lucknow, Lawrence, sensing the danger, called women, children and pensioners into the residency, while others came of their own will and began to prepare for a siege. On May the 30th, the Muslim festival of Eid, most of the Aoud and Bengal troops at Lucknow broke into open rebellion. Lawrence, initially with an army of around 1,700 soldiers, including the 32nd Foot Regiment, managed to drive the rebels out of the city. So all the British had was 1,700 soldiers, and they were against 30,000 of these Indian soldiers, who also had the weapons, the British weapons, that they had been handed. In an attempt to prevent the rebels reforming, Lawrence led an expedition to attack the group, but it was unsuccessful, and the British were themselves driven back to the residency. Lieutenant William George Cubitt of the 13th Native Infantry was awarded the Victoria Cross, Britain's highest honour, several years later for his act of saving the lives of three men during the treat. See, it's no idle terminology to call these men heroes. One of them was ordered the highest honour that we actually have in Britain. They were genuine heroes. Bombardments began on June the 30th. In one incident, a roof fell and trapped a civilian. Corporal William Oxenham saved the civilian in the midst of heavy rifle fire, and he was also awarded the Victoria Cross. The attack was repulsed, but by July the 2nd, Lawrence had been mortally wounded. A shell had burst in his room at the residency, and he had a wound in his hip. He died 2 days later. Those inside survived on diminishing rations, and diseases such as smallpox and scurvy were rife. The first relief attempt came on September the 25th, when the 78th Highlanders, under the command of Major General Sir Henry Havelock, fought across rebel-held territory. By the time the army reached the residency, too many men had died, and it was too risky to rescue those stuck inside. Instead, the men joined the garrison and improved defences. On November the 16th, a much larger force, led by Lieutenant General Sir Colin Campbell, stormed the walled enclosure that blocked the way to the residency, and they reached the residency on November the 19th, and by November the 27th, those inside had been evacuated. And the losses, the British, 2,500 casualties out of 8,000 troops. So 30% of the troops were killed by the savages. And on the Indian side, an unknown number of casualties of some 30,000 rebels. So the British were outnumbered 3-1 in this, and their enemy were armed with all the same weapons that the British had. And this certainly wasn't a fair and even fight. These Indians had broken their oath of loyalty to the British, and they had turned the British's own weapons against them. And against these incredible odds, the British still actually managed to hold out in this siege until they gained relief. They are absolute heroes, and they should have more of a memorial than they actually have. To say that we are pandering to imperialism by honouring these men, it's projection, isn't it? Because what's really going on is the authorities are pandering to this Indian and changing our history to appease him and his imaginary version of history, where these savages that broke their oath are somehow the good guys. Well, thank you very much for listening. And as I pointed out earlier, if you want to learn more about the British Empire, check out the last 6 episodes of Real Britannia. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.